Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
Oh, come all ye faithful, welcome to the Football Ramble. Disappointing draw at Anfield, but an entertaining one at the Etihad. It's Monday, 18th of December. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Luke Moore.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Vidushin Hantaraja.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble. And it's Monday, but it's a good Monday. Because it is the last one, really, until Christmas really comes alive and gets going. So
absolutely.
We're looking forward to that. Next Monday, it'll be a totally different vibe.
It will.
So hang on in there.
Yeah, definitely.
And we'll be with you all the way.
It's good advice.
Very good advice, I think, if I may say so myself. Now, before we get into the show, a reminder that you can listen to Saturday's Mailbag now. We do the Mailbag every week. And in my humble opinion, it is extremely good.
Yeah.
Luke, Vish and I debated whether football was really better in the good old days, and Vish made the case for Ben Stokes starting in midfield for the England football team. What more could you want?
But other than that, it was really good.
Find that episode below this one in your podcast app. Now, gentlemen, let's start our Premier League roundup with some chat about Bournemouth versus Luton and, of course, Tom Lockyer. The game was suspended in the 65th minute after the Luton Town captain suffered a cardiac arrest on the pitch. Now, Luton have confirmed, of course, that his condition is now stable and he's in a hospital receiving further tests. And you know, he was in a stable condition, or he was certainly responding fairly soon after the incident. And I think when the news came out that he'd collapsed, the game was suspended, everyone fears the worst.
Yeah,
your stomach goes, you know, you're reminded of sort of the harrowing images of Christian Eriksen, of course, made a full recovery. He's back in the Premier League, as we all know. It's awful. And you're just waiting for that news to update.
And especially given the health issues that Tom Lockyer has had in the past. I mean, he collapsed in the playoff final not that long ago.
Exactly, yeah.
Had surgery, I believe, and was passed fully fit to play again. We don't want to speculate. None of us are medical professionals either, but it does seem that's an interesting part of the story. You couldn't see the pictures when I was watching soccer Saturday. It was Tim Sherwood on the game. I actually thought Tim Sherwood, you know, for all the stick that I particularly give him. He actually dealt with it very well as a broadcaster as well. All of us have been in a live broadcasting environment. Not easy to handle that kind of thing when you don't know what's happening and the cameras have panned away, which is always a bad sign. Mm. And you do fear the worst, but it was great to hear that he's now stable and he's in hospital being looked after. Luton haven't released a statement this morning, as far as I know, but they have said that he's currently undergoing further tests and awaiting the results before the next steps of his recovery are determined. So, look, most important thing is, as with anyone, is his health, and that's what he needs. And then we'll wait and see what happens after that. But it's very, very relieving to hear that he's hopefully on the mend and is doing okay.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Right, gentlemen, let's turn our attention to Manchester City 2, Crystal Palace 2. As I said, an entertaining one at the Etihad. I mean, it all happened really towards the end of the game, of course, in that penalty decision. Not a controversial one, because Phil Foden absolutely smashed it. Like, Phil Foden went down clutching his own foot. He hurt himself during the challenge. But Michael Olise, when he stepped up to take that penalty, I thought two things. I thought, my goodness, you're handsome. And the second one was, just such a cool, calm head to have in that moment. Yeah. The way he strokes the penalty, and it was just effortless.
Not a cucumber in the world as cool as that moment.
It was like he was thinking, this will get me a move here.
Yeah.
I might not even need to get on the bus.
Probably thinking, oh, I'm going to have to celebrate this, aren't I?
The one thing I thought was, when you talk about Foden smash, just that Jean-Philippe Mateta is massive.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
He is an absolute gigantic unit.
Did you think he just suddenly remembered that? Because his goal, he was like, no, this is going in.
Yeah.
Just by force, this
we're
is going in.
We're all going in. We're all going in the net.
But the passage of play that led to that Palace penalty, it was hilarious.
Yeah.
There was something so comical about it. Because I think the Man City players thought, well, the game stopped there. And then the game said, you're not going to count that, are you? And it was like the referee blew and just went, yes, I think so. Penalty.
Yeah. referees love that as well.
Yeah.
They do love to do that. I mean, it's the correct decision. So everyone wins apart from Man City.
Yeah.
But it wasn't
like Palace.
It wasn't a controversial. They drew. Mm. No one wins. It was a controversial. It wasn't a controversial decision, is my point. And like, he was well within his rights to be able to do that. Mm. And it is interesting how, if you look back at recent Man City games, okay, they won against Luton, but narrowly. The other two kind of wins they've had in recent times have been in the Champions League.
Yeah, they've only won one of the last six league games, Luke.
Yeah.
Haven't won in the league at home since the 4th of November.
And the one thing you would sort of attribute to Pep Guardiola teams is this idea of control, right? Mm. Like they keep hold of the ball to control the game, and they take the game away from you because they've got superior players, superior tactical nous and all the rest of it.
But they nearly did that.
They can't seem to do that at the moment.
But it's just moments, isn't it?
Nearly doing it isn't doing it.
They're
though,
like
is it?
The Death Star. Like, it's absolutely impenetrable apart from this big hole in the middle.
What's the hole?
The hole is, they've just conceded a mad goal, out of nowhere, again, with the Mateta goal.
But the Etihad hasn't blown up or anything.
Not yet.
No one's shot at it, really, in the right place.
No, it's true, yeah.
Yeah, this is the thing for Manchester City, because, as I said, they nearly did it, but you're right, look, of course, nearly is famously not.
But they were
there.
Also completely outclassed by Aston Villa.
But with this game against Palace, the frustrating thing for them is like, it was a 95th minute. The end of the day, they didn't win the match. And a lot of people in that stadium weren't happy about it. Although Roy Hodgson seemed to be very happy about it.
Oh, he was loving it.
Beautiful. We say that Michael Olise, famously doesn't really celebrate goals and was quite sort of unemotionless. Although when he scored, he really was quite passionate. But one man who certainly showed a bit of emotion was Roy the Boy on the touchline.
Yeah, but the emotion was sort of, well, would you look at that?
It was also like, the way he looked, because of his age and everything, it was like he had woken up in the morning, was making a cup of tea at the kitchen window, and he just saw a boy skateboard past his house.
Do you think so? I think it's more he's having a walk down the pier or something. And he's like, oh, I just love it. Oh, the sunshine's come out.
Yeah, that's nice.
The sun's come out.
It wasn't anything vicious, is what you're saying.
Nothing vicious. No. Well, Palace, of course, in their last six visits to the Etihad, they've won two, drawn two, and lost two.
Not bad, is it?
Pretty good record. I mean, not many other teams, perhaps none, who could boast a record like that. Dearie me. Yeah, it's not good reading for Manchester City, but it was a glorious point for Palace. Should Edison have been sent off for that foul on Mateta in the first half, by the way? I feel that everyone was going like, yeah, booking, that's fine. I was a bit like, I wouldn't.
What's your argument for it being more than the booking?
Well, because I think you could say it denied a goal-scoring opportunity. I know there's that sort of unwritten rule, so it's therefore not a rule or a law. If a goalkeeper makes a foul outside the box and it's one of those, it's usually given as a red card. Yeah, but I mean, I suppose you can't go on that.
Is this a prequel to you get on your high horse about Raul Jimenez later?
I'm just building up.
Yeah, I thought you might be.
That's quite smart.
Yeah, it's very good.
I'll concede this, but I'm getting that.
I thought, what do you think? Did you think
the yellow card was the right decision?
To be honest, it's a weird one because I completely forgot about it until you just reminded me of it. So, obviously, in my mind, it didn't seem like it was an outrageous
decision. What do you think, Vish?
Thought maybe because Diaz was covering that they ruled it out as a... Well, I think that's why they ruled it out as he wasn't preventing a goal-scoring opportunity. But they should probably remember that Diaz can't use his hands.
Yeah.
Which is quite a big deal.
I just thought that everyone quickly moved on from that.
I think because he sort of... It's a very, very quick trip rather than like studs to the shin, isn't it? So it's like, I don't think it would have counted. It wouldn't have crossed into the threshold of dangerous play.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's probably why it was.
And there's also a part of the law is about a genuine attempt to play the ball as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you've got to bear it all in mind.
Well, in the other net, of course, it was Dean Henderson's Premier League debut.
Made some good
Crystal
saves.
Palace.
Yeah.
Did make some good saves.
Which is what you need from a goalkeeper.
It's a funny one with Dean Henderson because we all know he's very highly rated. And he certainly thought that about himself. And probably
still
does.
Big time, yeah.
I'm just surprised that this is his Premier League debut for Palace. Now, I know Palace have also got a very good goalkeeper in Sam Johnson. You know, they seem to always have at least a few good goalkeepers at that club. I would have thought by now he would be kind of starting for a
His career has been that. I mean, if you look at the fact that he's 26,
yeah,
and he's been at seven different clubs.
It's been a very
kind of itinerant career so far. He spent time at Manchester United, obviously, Stockport, Grimsby, Shrewsbury, Sheffield United, Nottingham Forest, and now Palace.
Yeah.
Palace is a permanent move at least. So maybe you'd and that's also interesting because Arsenal play Brighton at the weekend and Brighton rotate their keepers all the time. There's been a lot of chat about having two good goalkeepers at Arsenal, two good goalkeepers at Palace now,
yeah,
as well.
Indeed, but I'm just saying that that's his debut and you saw the quality that he had.
Absolutely, yeah.
Should he go north of the border, Jim? Because some English goalkeepers, Jack Butland, just won a trophy, for crying out loud.
Well, it's an argument that I'm sure he'll be having with himself all day long, every day.
Jim, but why don't you respect the fact that English goalkeepers go north of the border sometimes?
Have I expressed any why don't you respect
Marcus, ask him one.
Fraser Forster.
I haven't.
I want to go back to Chris Woods, if you
Joe
want.
Joe Hart.
So from Fraser Forster to Chris Woods, that feels like it's quite a big gap, a huge gap. Yeah.
What about Joe Hart?
Why don't you respect... a tournament that's decided before the quarterfinal equivalent in the English
I rate the Scottish League Cup. I like it. They're done before Christmas. Yeah. First trophy out the way, bang.
Let's get that out of the way.
Yeah, they've got, and they can concentrate
on running.
And exactly.
I'm sure it's just a coincidence. I don't believe in conspiracies or anything like that, as you guys know, but I'm sure it's a coincidence that Marcus has brought up Scottish football the day or two after Rangers have won a cup.
I wanted to link it to Hearts beating Celtic.
Oh, did you? Okay.
That's all I wanted to do.
Enough.
Okay.
Right.
And you. Enough. So if you don't like conspiracy theories, why do you subscribe to Matt Letizia's letters?
Because you've got to keep the enemy close. I'll tell you what, Matt Letizia is the gateway drug to Ricky Lambert, as you well know.
Yeah, indeed. Well, anyway, back to...
back
to Manchester City versus Crystal Palace. So Dean Henderson played very well. Rico Lewis scored his first Premier League goal.
He bludgeoned that in as well, didn't he? Get out of the way, everyone. Bang!
A man with much talent, Vish.
Yeah, I mean, he was... That was supposed to be like the opening of the floodgates to a point, but I feel like because of Lewis and because of, I suppose primarily because of him actually, there is this sense that Man City are bringing through like the other generation. I was going to throw Cole Palmer in there as well. Obviously, he's gone elsewhere, but
he's still done brilliantly though.
Yeah, you know, those younger players at City that you've heard about are kind of coming to fruition now. And then you get a result like this and you're kind of like, hold on, what's actually the problem here? Because Rodri's playing, which used to be a problem. You've got youngsters coming through.
Yep.
Everyone's pretty established. And they're still conceding goals. Like, you know, they've conceded 20 goals in 17 games now, which is, you don't really equate a Man City side to concede.
It's about control.
More than a goal a game.
Because even if you...
But why are they ceding control?
But if you look at, say, Jeremy Doku's been one of their standout players this year, right? Doku, Rodri and Haaland has probably been their standout players this year, right? Doku isn't part of the team at the moment. Grealish comes in and scores in three games in a row. So everywhere you look, there seems to be things happening, right? But for some reason, I personally believe it's the old Alex Ferguson thing that he talks about a lot during his career, which is if you have a showpiece season... And everything has to be right. Mm-hmm. Everything gears towards it. Everyone's playing in the same direction. You look around the dressing room, you go, right, we've got this here. you know, we may be unlucky, but there's no weakness here. And you win a treble like they did. The next season is the hardest challenge you have as a manager because you can't get the players to do it. You can't. And Marcus has already mentioned that, like, some of these players have even talked about this publicly.
Well, Grealish being the obvious.
Yeah.
One.
So it's probably some, in my view, it may be a bit of a lazy comparison, but it seems to be something like that. And if you look at the position Manchester City are in, it's not just about points being dropped. There's a long way to go. We're not even at the halfway point yet. It's about the teams around you. You're going to have to overhaul because it becomes. A lot of people think when they talk about the relegation picture, oh, well, there's so many points left to play for. If you've got so many teams to overhaul, it basically compounds the problem. Manchester City at the moment are fourth in the table. They're a point off fifth. They could be fifth, you know, this time next week or whatever. It becomes a real problem because you're talking about Arsenal and Liverpool and Aston Villa and Spurs and potentially all these teams to overcome.
Yeah.
It makes it very, very difficult.
Well, Manchester United, when they won the treble in the late 90s, the following season, I mean, they won the league at a canter. They, you know, Arsenal was second by was about 18 points or something like that. It was crazy. But the 91 points, in a way, it was still quite impressive, whereas Man City are struggling.
Well, moment. City are going for their fourth in a row, aren't they, which hasn't been done, and there's probably a reason that hasn't been done. That is, again, that's similar in terms of just keeping standards up for that long and also tweaking in a way that remains so like incredibly functional that it wins a title to that degree. On a personal level, I think actually Jack Grealish deserves a lot of respect for rising to the Doku challenge. He himself in the summer said, didn't he, that he was a little bit concerned about keeping standards up and keeping motivation up. And we know what Grealish is like. He wears his heart on his sleeve. He says what he thinks. And clearly having sort of some sort of personal challenge around him has served as that motivation to get those standards up and to sort of like to rally and fight for the cause again. I think at Villa it was easy for him to do that because obviously, you know, his boyhood club, they were fighting for survival a lot. Different at City, much easier to just kind of ride along on the crest of that wave. But the challenge of Doku has made him step up to that. And I do wonder if we're going to see what we've seen in pretty much every season under Guardiola, bar perhaps his first season when he was first getting used to the league, of whether they are going to go on their sort of like horrendous, marauding, just like rampage in the second half of the season.
It does tend to happen.
Yeah, surely sooner or later that won't happen, right? It feels like maybe if that's ever not going to happen, it will be in the season after a treble.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, you are right to say that. I mean, last season, for the first half of the season, Manchester City weren't that convincing. They had dropped, but I don't think it was as concerning as this. But, you know, that second half of last...
I don't think it is concerning.
Right.
I think it's great.
Well, Arsenal were top of Christmas last season. They could be top of Christmas again this season.
They could be, yeah. But I think with Manchester City, if Haaland is injured, lest we forget, you know, even Kevin De Bruyne is still away.
Mid-January.
Well, this is it, isn't it?
Yeah. He's coming back.
Right, so...
two
of the best players in the world. Right.
He said, De Bruyne said recently that he wants to return as the best player in the world, so that's nice. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, okay.
Well done, everyone.
Yeah. But speaking, are they doing this on purpose? Is he even injured?
So, yeah.
they're trying to give everybody a head start. Exactly. Then we'll go, right, let's just
really
make
challenge
a
themselves.
A bit more fun for us, maybe.
Yeah, Guardiola, to motivate him, has locked him in like a Saw-style room. He's got to get out of it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Jack Grealish, who, by the way, scored in his third successive Premier League game for the first time in his career. It was revealed early in the week that he hired out a Nando's back in the West Midlands for a Christmas party. The restaurant arranged a special menu titled Grealish's Festive Grub, and there was even a new sauce created for him called Super Jack Sauce.
What is in that sauce?
It might be
Jamie Vardy's Skittle recipe.
Could be
liquefied Play-Doh. Could be absolutely anything.
You know when you're a kid and you think, well, I'll just mix all the sauces in the house together. And I think that's what he's done.
I used to do that as well. Yeah. I'm pleased that I'm not the only person that did do that.
Your mate, John McGinn, was there. Yeah, he was
legend.
There apparently, among other pals.
If you were Jack Grealish's mate who wasn't a footballer, would you be a little bit annoyed that he was doing it at Nando's?
Nah,
I think I'd do it somewhere like.
No, I think Nando's is the great leveler, isn't it?
Footballers love Nando's because you can also eat fairly healthily. Yeah,
I know, but if you weren't a footballer, you'd want a bit of a blowout, wouldn't you?
Oh well, listen. Apparently, the special menu
it's mid-season, man.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be for footballers.
No, true.
Host it.
Yeah, they can have desserts. The footballers will have the chicken. They'll have the lean meats and the veg.
You say that, but according to the story, the only photo available from the meal featured a massive plate of chips, loads of halloumi, and bottles of Portuguese Lager Sagres. So,
well, that's your non-footballing pals.
That was vicious end of the table.
There was a quote about how he likes a McDonald's as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, him and Erling Haaland were sort of talking about the old food and
I
so
mean,
on.
I mean, we talked about the legendary black card on Friday, the Nando's black card that used to exist, which apparently gave you unlimited Nando's if you were a celebrity or whatever. And like, Grealish is really up the ante here. Like, that's, I don't think the ante can be upped anymore.
No, he's paid for it, though. He's paid for it.
You know what that is? That's Richie Rich, isn't it?
Yes.
It is a bit. Definitely.
Yeah.
It is a bit.
Apparently some people were a little bit annoyed, the locals, because they turned up wanting a Nando's and they're like, what's going on here?
People love Nando's.
It
cannot be the only Nando's in the West Midlands.
In that particular area.
But it's annoying when you go to a pub and they say, oh, it's closed tonight for a private party or whatever. So it's the same vibe.
But then Grealish and one or two of the others did do a few photos, so I think it appeased them.
They were hungry, but they were pleased. Jack, thanks for the photo. I'd rather have that grilled chicken pitta if I could.
And he threw a bottle of his sauce at them. And they all got covered in it, Jim. Not now.
Carry on.
Okay.
What's the next bit?
Yeah.
I just wanted to segue into his former club, Aston Villa, of course. Aston Villa, away to Brentford, won 2-1. Both sides finished the game with 10 men.
This was the most ridiculous passage of play of the season.
Yeah. I love it when two teams who otherwise rarely sort of meet just decide for one afternoon that they hate each other.
And who would have thought that Emi Martinez and Neil Morpai, a.k.a. probably the two biggest cunts in the Premier League.
Do you not think Martinez, though, there's a likable quality about him?
No.
No, you're not. I think there's a pantomime.
You
quality,
like him,
surely.
That's fine. Don't make me like
Jim
him.
Jim was immediately in defence. Yeah. Vish has
I've
the
got
casting vote.
Bias lingering. Yeah.
Was it not a lovely colliding of worlds for something that, as Jim mentioned, you know, it was Morpay beefing with Leno that led Martinez on this path to glory now, and then they've met.
Yeah.
It's like a cinematic universe.
Yeah.
But do you not think, though, Martinez, with all the antics in the World Cup and so on, what he did?
Yeah, but like, you could have a mate who's a cunt, can't you?
Yeah.
Martinez is your mate who's a cunt. Morpay
I've
is
got
your...
three of them in here. Yeah.
He's fucking a glove. He's trying to fuck a glove.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Therefore, I don't like him.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Because he's mugged off everybody. He mugged off the world doing that. It's hilarious.
You did a poem about him last week. That's okay. That's up to you.
It was an ode, not a poem.
Sorry, an ode. I apologise. And I don't...
You're an ode.
I just think... I mean, objectively, I suppose, I find it entertaining, but I think he's unquestionably a cock.
He's a shit house.
Yeah. I like that he kind of had a pop at Neil Mopar, because I don't like him very much either.
There you go.
It was the most pointless and pantomimish thing I've seen in the Premier League for a very long time.
Very enjoyable.
The passage of that did lead to Kamara putting his fingers in someone else's mouth and getting sent off. So it actually cost Villa a player.
It worked, didn't it? Yeah.
He could believe it. It was like he did that thing that a lot of players do in that kind of situation where they go, well, look, it's the end of the game.
Yeah.
You can still be sent off. No,
it's a free hit.
Yeah,
hit. That's the problem.
It feels so pointless because you can technically be sent off in the car park, and the referee's on the premises you can be sent off.
Yeah, that's just young and foolish.
Because it happened to Dean Windass. Didn't he get sent off like three times in the same game?
Yeah, but he kept turning round and having a go at the referee. Yeah. The referee's, I've told you, here's another one.
Yeah,
here's another one. Get lost. Was Ben Meeser sending off because Thomas Frank seemed to not see it?
That's okay then.
Fine.
Yeah.
It was a clear red card.
Hang on, everyone. Varkan, let's get a decision. The manager didn't see it. So can we still definitely send him off?
Doesn't seem fair.
Yeah.
He said
you think you're a 7-year-old that can stand in the corner and close your eyes and that didn't happen?
Can we check that it did happen? Because he wouldn't lie about it, would he?
I mean, he thought it wasn't a sending off. It's just like, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
He thought it wasn't a sending off because of the reaction of the player. The Villa player didn't like go over and like...
I mean, he very much endangered the opponent, really.
Yeah, it's a red card. To be fair to Ben Mee, I think it's his first red card for 10 years.
Really?
So, I mean, he's obviously not made a habit of this kind of stuff.
No one's saying that.
But the incident is the incident.
I'm not saying because it was Ben Mee it should be a red card. No. I'm saying because of where he put his foot and how he did it.
I'm just saying he's not a Christian Romero type character.
No one's saying that.
No, he's not.
No one's saying that. Unai Emery was getting involved. He got
straight in there.
He got a booking, didn't he?
He did.
I thought he did well. He was trying to play peacemaker.
I wasn't sure why he got booked.
He took a booking because he left the technical area.
Oh, yeah.
He had to. He was like, I will die on my yellow card because these boys are going to all get sent.
It's kind of a bit like, you know, you're driving a family member to the hospital who's in labour and you still get busted for speeding.
Yeah, or get a parking fine.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah. It's
because he's
so
trying to do
silly.
The right thing there. It doesn't send the right message, does it?
Yeah, but you can't go like 60 in a 20 mile an hour, though.
No, you can't. But I'm just... Okay, it's a pained analogy.
Right.
But I'm just saying, Emery's... The message being sent there is a real kind of... you know, Poindexter bookish one, isn't it? Yeah, but technically you've left it. Technically, yeah. So
like revenge of the nerds seems like the theme of the entire Premier League at the moment.
Yeah, it does. Officials. And I think also Arsenal fans would say on Twitter would say that because it's only because Emery used to manage Arsenal that he's been booked for that.
Good point.
Really? Probably
would, yeah, but people will say he was, but it would be far less measured than that.
Yeah, it would. Yeah.
But the argument is he was gaining an advantage from leaving the technical.
Yeah.
You know, if he'd have stayed there, maybe more of the players would have been sent off.
Yeah.
That might not even be the most like angry thing that happened in the game. No. The Ollie Watkins situation.
Well, exactly. Yeah. We should talk about that.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. I love it.
It was so good.
And what I loved as well is the way they went back to the Match of the Day 2 studio. And Ian Wright was just chuckling, going, oh, yes.
Yeah.
I remember when Aaron Ramsdale, I think it was away to Leeds, when Arsenal won 4-0 a couple of seasons ago. And Ramsdale had been getting it from the Leeds fans. Mm. And then when Arsenal scored the third or something like that, he started doing this little Thomas Ravelli jig.
I remember that.
And it cut back and Ian Wright on Twitter, actually, currently known as X, said, oh man, I really miss this about playing. And I love that. I love that about Ian Wright. And as they said, you know, it's the right to reply.
He's about to leave Match of the Day as well, end of the season.
He is. Real shame.
It'd be a real shame.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the Ollie Watkins thing, it's brilliant that he's able to shut that fan up. It's great that it happened. Obviously, Ollie Watkins used to play for Brentford, so I presume that was something to do with it.
That fan definitely will be shut up now and will learn his lesson.
But that's something I wanted to mention, is that, like, you know, when people talk about poor behaviour of fans, they talk about things like racism and sexism and homophobia, and rightly so, and I totally understand that, and that's really the most important thing that we should be targeting. But I've witnessed personally loads of like really unacceptable, poor behaviour that doesn't actually happen to fit in any of those buckets.
It's still fucking dreadful.
Yeah. And that guy should be ashamed of himself for behaving in that way. And I'm pleased that he's, for him solely, I'm pleased his team got beaten.
Yeah. Also, the reaction of people around you, or people around him rather, would be like, well done, mate.
Yeah, you fucking knob. Because football fans will probably think that's his fault. That's how karma works in football.
I think from the brief footage that you could see in the highlights of that particular incident, I think he sort of stared Watkins out a little bit as if he's winning in some way by not backing down the absolute melon.
Yeah. I told you once at Fratton Park, Portsmouth played... it must have been Wimbledon because it was Vinnie Jones was playing. And I was in a seat right by the touchline. And the ball came into the crowd. And Vinnie Jones came to get it to take a throw in. And some guy next to me was like screaming abuse at him. And Vinnie Jones just gave him this look, which was just like, all right, yeah. As in, like, my life is infinitely better than yours. Yeah, just give me the ball, you fucking loser. Mm. And it made him feel, the guy, you could just tell by his face, it made him feel like 2 inches tall. And that's much more powerful than just windmilling in there doing the old Eric Dyer.
Absolutely.
Ollie
Watkins' post-match was great. He was asked about it and he said there was one individual who was giving me grief all game, and that the pause was delicious. You could put any insult you want in that pause and it would be appropriate.
Individual.
Yeah, I think, I mean, look, for the vast majority of cases, obviously footballers blanket up, rise above it, and so on. Because you can't be put off your
game.
They
have to, don't they?
You simply have to. But yeah, the fans can, you know, within the realms of the law, they feel like they can just say absolutely anything.
Yeah.
So when you do get one of these moments, it is glorious. Sometimes it goes a bit too far. I mean, I remember Jamie Carragher at Highbury. Now, he got a coin thrown at him.
Yeah.
He shouldn't throw it back, though.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But there is an element of this with fan culture, not always, but sometimes, where you'll have a guy there with, say, like his 8-year-old son, and he'll scream abuse at players. Mm-hmm. All game, and the moment a player sticks their fingers back up at him, they go, well, my son's here. You've got an example.
Not even that. They can't take it.
Yeah, yeah.
I never understand that about people. And you do, but I mean, I don't think most football fans are like that. There is definitely a section and a healthy minority who would be. But sometimes I think some players, when they give it some, and so there was that clip earlier in the season, I think it was at Bournemouth, where they were chanting at Maddison. It was nothing nasty. It was like, you know, Southgate thinks you're shit or something like that. And he turns around and he pretends to miss kick it and go, whee! And they all applaud him, you know.
Oh, no, he moves the ball off the quadrant.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So you
can have this sort of, a bit pantomime, as you say, and football is brilliant when
That's nothing vicious.
But it's pantomime always on the fans' terms, though, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, that's the thing. That's the behaviour
that we just deem to be acceptable, so that's fun.
This fan went a bit too far and you know, was more, couldn't have made a mug of him, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think more of that.
I was so glad it wasn't Vard.
Yeah. Imagine that.
That would have been awful. That would have been awful for absolutely
everybody. If that had happened, I would have loved to have seen the fans' reaction as it got VAR. Yeah.
Also, I think it really helped that Watkins, at the end of the game, went over to Thomas Frank. He's like, you know, there's not a problem with you. And Frank clearly went, oh, yeah, no. That bloke over there is Belland. Yeah.
He follows every game.
He does it to everyone, yeah.
I'll get rid of him. Yeah.
But it was a win for Aston Villa. They've won 25 Premier League games in 2023. Their best record in a calendar year in their entire history.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Especially given what storied club they are.
How about that? They've 81 points in 2023 they've gained. Only Manchester City have more.
Racking up those wins is impressive, isn't it? And because they're doing it so consistently, they're starting to build a bit of an aura around them now.
Definitely.
They seem like the real deal at the moment. Obviously, there's a long way to go.
And they've got some great games coming up. They're Sheffield United at home next.
Yeah.
They go to Old Trafford after that, Vish, on Boxing Day. Lovely little Christmas treat for you, pal. Did you not
watch the game on Sunday? Did you not see the black hole that we've become?
We'll do that in a minute. And after that, they play Burnley at home. Yeah. So, I mean, they could still be going
also,
on.
Arsenal go to Anfield next weekend as well. And that was a draw last season. If it's a draw again and they beat Sheffield United, Villa will be top at Christmas.
I mean, incredible, yeah.
But go on, the villains.
I think this may well be one of those games they look back on and go, that was...
Important.
Because they were 1-0 down.
Important to put
they
away.
Couldn't, yeah, exactly. They couldn't break them down. The sending off helped, of course, enormously. And then they get out of there with a win. They've been travelling, in Europe, only a few days ago. So this could be one of those wins. People talk about the fortuitous ones or grinding them out and so on. Well, they've got one here and they're still in the title race.
And the spectre of the feast is Man City, as we talked about earlier. Man City have got the Club World Cup to deal with at the moment.
Unlux.
They're playing in Saudi Arabia, I think, tomorrow night, aren't they? Against the Japanese side, I think.
Really?
Yeah, so, I mean, they've got loads to deal with. So you never know.
All eyes on that.
Well, it could potentially work in their favour as well, because they're not going to be competitive games and it might actually be quite a surprise rest. Yeah.
So you reckon travelling to Saudi Arabia the week before Christmas is good for a team who can't buy a win?
A team who won't need to play their starting players, yeah. Mm-hmm. Warm weather training, bit of sun in your back.
All right. We'll see, won't we?
Maybe Jordan Henderson will be in the crowd giving them all abuse.
Seems like an anti-City bias to me.
Yeah, because it's a tournament that's being run by FIFA, it's in Saudi Arabia. I think they need to check. I know it's in Saudi Arabia.
Is that right?
They might add 15 odd games to it.
Probably
as well,
will.
Between now and tomorrow.
If they decide to.
It's up to them.
Yeah.
Hendo's done a good job, though, getting this over. Well done, him.
Did you see the Club World Cup has been announced for the summer of 2025?
Yeah. Thing is, though, Marcus,
it is.
You notice?
Yeah.
There's no third place playoff. So
that's fine.
They are reducing the amount of games in their own little way.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I tell you what, we will compromise with you.
Yeah.
That third place playoff. We might not do it.
Honestly, do check it out. You won't believe it. You'll look in there and go, it's like 12 teams from Europe playing in it. I mean, it is the Super League they're creating here.
Yeah.
So, let's do it. Let's talk about it.
Are we?
Okay, no, it's not.
Yeah, right, please don't. I genuinely would rather go for a break than talk about football.
Chelsea, Real Madrid, Man City, Bayern Munich, PSG, Inter Milan, Porto, Benfica, and four other teams yet to be decided.
It could be your team.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome back to the Football Good. Ramble, everybody. Yes, I'll give it to Jason Tindall. He'll have your heart.
Yeah, definitely.
He'll caress it, won't he?
Someone pointed out the other day that he really, really looks like a wolf from Gladiators.
Yes. It's a weird one, isn't it? He should grow his hair.
With a haircut, yeah. Because yeah. Wolf had a skullet, didn't he? Like a proper big skullet.
Yes. Yeah.
Jason Tindall probably got a good hairline at the moment, but he could grow it out and give us all a treat.
He looks like, you know, if they did like a Masters Love Island,
yeah,
like over 40s, he'd be on that.
Oh, yeah, we said this. We said yeah.
No, but like Masters, so you know it's the older one.
Yeah, of course,
Masters. Yeah. Are you angling for you? I reckon you cut a good figure on that.
If I did Love Island, I'd probably become the first contestant to go in the swimming pool with a shirt on.
And you'd probably become single if you went on the other
side.
I do think every series of Love Island should have someone of our age on it as like a punishment.
Yeah, I'm up for that. Our age? Fish is a lot younger than us.
Well, in our bracket.
Okay. Yeah. I agree.
In our age on a form.
We're all ticking the same box, aren't we? Yeah.
I think it should be you, Jim.
We should say thanks to friend of the Ramble, Jam Hands. Don't ask us how we got those hands for choosing that clip. You can become a friend of the Ramble too by heading over to patreon.com/footballramble. What a stocking filler.
It is a great community. Yeah. I'm always on the Discord over there. I bloody enjoy the chat, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
It's great stuff. Right, it's time for an update on the Football Ramble Acca with Betfair. Every weekend we're placing a £10 Acca on our four match 90 markets across the Premier League, where any winning bets are paid out in 90 minutes, and that's important because you'll hear why in a minute. So you don't need to worry about any stoppage time drama ruining your bet. Game number one, Marcus picked Aston Villa to beat Brentford. They did the business.
Come on, I've done my bit.
You're back on the horse.
Yep.
Jim picked Fulham to draw against Newcastle. Shit show. Newcastle won 3-0. Vish picked Everton to beat Burnley. Everton won 2-0.
Sticking
well done,
with
Vish.
Everton.
Luke, that's me, yeah. Picked Liverpool to beat Man United. They drew 0-0 what was the worst game of the century. Now, Michael Olise's stoppage time penalty in the aforementioned Manchester City 2, Crystal Palace 2 game means that a massive 35,698 people who bet on Man City to beat Crystal Palace still got their bet paid out thanks to Betfair's Match Odds 90 markets, and it also earned us another £10 for Prostate Cancer UK. And more good news, Betfair are getting into the festive spirit with their 12 pays of Christmas competition. They're offering a £90 free bet every day till Christmas Eve to lucky punters who submit their heartbreaking losing bets. All you have to do to enter is tweet your losing bet slip and use the hashtag 12 pays of Christmas to be in with a chance of winning. That's it from me, Marcus. It's back to you in the studio.
Thank you, Luke Moore. We now go to Liverpool 0, Manchester United 0. Virgil van Dijk said there was only one team, I think, that were trying to win that game.
Man United.
Roy Keane was terribly offended by this.
Mm. Yeah,
said it was arrogant.
But he also ended the broadcast by saying, hopefully when Liverpool play Arsenal, Arsenal will try and win the game. So he was kind of a bit conflicted.
Yeah, but I think
that was sarcasm, though.
But he's just angry. Daniel Sturridge was in there, you know, poking him a bit.
He's brilliant, Daniel Sturridge.
Yeah, and it was at Anfield. Roy Keane probably got a bit of pelters on the way in.
Oh, massive.
He knew he was going to get some on the way out, and he was just chucking stones. That's probably what happened.
But, I mean, the one thing that's interesting is that, you know, to put this in perspective for those of you who, mercifully listening, didn't see this game, and I cannot, you know, tell you how jealous I am that you spent 2.5 hours doing something else, because I wish I did. Liverpool had 34 shots, right? If you take into account the ball's only really in play for, what, 60 minutes? Right.
Sometimes not even that.
Yeah, that is a shot every 2 minutes.
Yep. Yeah. And it was only that Trent one that really kind of...
It still never looked like they were going to score, did they?
Yeah. They sort of battered them 0-0 this time.
Yeah, it was a very strange game. It was awful to watch. Man United were abysmally bad. Liverpool were astonishingly sloppy. It was just like you wanted to grab Liverpool, get him in a huddle, shake him and say... Mm-hmm. If you just concentrate now, you will win this game 5-0.
I'm sure Robbie Fowler's here. Just put him up front and put one away.
He would have done.
The whole thing seemed like a sort of site-specific, very expensive piece of physical theatre about erectile dysfunction.
Yeah, it did. It did.
Just in their heads, it was, this is gonna be good. Oh, no, just, no, it's, no. For lots of different reasons, it just wasn't happening for anyone.
Do you want to carry on, Jim?
No.
It felt a bit
said
like...
enough. Ask me if I'll carry on.
I would. For those who remember, when Pelé used to advertise. Yeah.
God rest him. His legacy is multifarious, but on this show, it's basically about erectile dysfunction. Yeah.
There's a bit in that advert where he, I don't know why, it sounds like he freestyles it.
Yeah.
And he goes, you need to get treatment.
It's just... Poor Pelé.
Yeah.
It was like, do you know what this game was like? It was like, you've been given a present and they said, we're going to take you to a really expensive restaurant. Mm. And you get there.
Nando's
Jack you're looking forward to it for the whole week. Mm. And you get there and it's Salt Bae's restaurant.
I saw it more as like Takeshi's Castle type, everyone trying to gain a footing on like a soapy floor.
Yeah,
that's also at an angle, and boulders are coming through.
But the reason I said the bit about wanting to shake Liverpool into kind of some kind of concentration is because I definitely felt like, because the first 10 minutes or so, they were so dominant, Liverpool.
Yeah.
If they had scored in that period, that would have been that.
Yeah.
They would have carried on. It's just because they couldn't score, it kept piling on them and they couldn't get them out of themselves out of this funk. And Man United were really just not a concern at all.
Man United made sure they didn't lose that game. And it was all because of what happened, of course, in the result last season. But they defended pretty well.
They defended okay.
They seemed to be different.
Liverpool had 34 shots.
Yeah, but quite
a few of those shots are like against someone who's like 2 yards away from you.
I don't think Man United defended well, personally.
Well, Varane defended quite well.
Liverpool hardly created anything. I mean, you've got to give
them I think that's their fault though, because I think
100%.
I think at some point it felt that Liverpool had too many cooks. And then all those cooks wanted to add their own garnish on things, and they ended up fucking it up for everyone else. Really, I thought it was actually quite. It was a performance indicative of how Liverpool have been over the last few weeks, which Liverpool fans have spoken about. They haven't been very convincing at all, and I would say the way they played against a bad Manchester United team who were playing badly at the time. Mm. I'm not talking about form here. In the moment, they were dreadful. I thought that's one of the arguments against Liverpool winning the league this season, because you just have to beat a team like that. You can't be that selfish in individual moments, particularly in the second half when
good point.
When Gakpo comes on, Klopp got a bit greedy, thinking they can go to 4-2-4. When I thought it made perfect sense to either bring on Jones or bring on Elliot, someone with a bit of industry who's going to be in the middle and be a bit busy. Mm. Because, you know, even someone like Szoboszlai had a dreadful game because he was clearly like trying to do his own thing, and his understanding with Salah completely went out the window in that first half. Felt like they were, you know, getting in each other's way. And I think, you know, they talked about in the studio about it coming from arrogance. I think it also came from how bad United have been, that they thought, they almost, as Luke alluded to before, they were almost in their own heads a bit, being like, why aren't we beating these? They're rubbish.
Yeah.
It was the only Simicast didn't have a shot of all the outfield players for Liverpool.
Wow, that's incredible.
I'd love to know if that's ever happened before in the Premier League.
Brilliant if Alisson had a go from a drop kick. I'll have it. Came up for the corner at the end of the game.
Yeah, he has scored. I mean, it could happen.
It'd have been hilarious if Rasmus Højlund had put that one away.
Oh, man.
Oh, that would have been, and that was the best chance of the game.
That would have been so funny. You saw why he obviously got... But it wasn't the funniest moment of the game. That was definitely Diogo Dalot being sent off in the same moment for two pieces of dissent.
Well, Colombo just had enough.
Mad.
He has to watch it as well. He was as angry as the rest of us.
I know that there have been these, there's been instruction at the start of the season that referees are going to clamp down on this sort of stuff. But football is an emotive game. And as human beings, when we're frustrated, we very often immediately take out and release that frustration. And I know there are times where you can cross a line, but I think it's impossible for players not to feel like that. You know, it's just, you can't take that out of what it is.
I thought a booking was fair.
And then, I think the second one is mad.
Well, it's the same piece. I mean, I think the referee should book him. And the referee goes, you carry on like that and I'll book you.
No, but you,
again,
but the problem
but
is,
it's also, you know, we ask for consistency, and I don't think consistency game to the game actually exists because they're refereed by different teams. You know, if we include VAR and all that as well.
Yeah, right.
But you know, Darwin Nunes had a situation where he was booked and then clapped the assistant referee on the sideline, like stuff like that, just. Gets, you know, they let it slide, but then because it's the end, because the atmosphere was a little bit more febrile, I think the referee responds to that. I just thought it was ridiculous. Well,
I don't think that was really doing anything other than just screaming into a void at that point.
Yeah, but Jim, you know, if Diogo Dalot reacts to a fact that the throw in was given to Liverpool when it came off Salah, right? He throws his fist at the referee in the direction of the referee and he gets booked. He then does exactly the same thing again. So if it was a booking 10 seconds ago, it's a booking now. It doesn't matter. If it's a level of dissent that crosses the threshold for a booking, and then you go and do exactly the same thing, you're a fucking idiot.
Well, at least he gave us something to talk about.
It's true.
And we applaud him for that.
I actually think, you know, if you look in the environment, I think it was Lars who was talking about on OTC last week, the environment that is generated in within football around referees can, you know, culminate in the thing that happened to that referee in Turkey, and that's a terrible thing. And referees, I don't think we should be too worried about referees striking a blow back for stamping their authority on a game. I mean, yeah, if he decides that crosses the threshold for dissent, and the guy does it twice, and it's two yellow cards, yellow cards is a red.
You convinced me.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't broadly I think it's a bit lame, but I don't disagree with the red card as it is. Like the technicalities of it, it's just, you know. Whatever. I mean, they just apply it when they want.
Yeah. That's the issue. And I think they're also tasked with something that's really difficult to discern, which is that they have to really pick up on the spirit of a game and the flow of a game and what's happening. And they don't want the game to descend into absolute anarchy. And they've got to think about that. And that's not something that viewers or possibly even people in this stadium can really judge on. Only referees can do that. I remember interviewing Howard Webb once when I said, why is it that, you know, when I play football on a Saturday or a Sunday, you're not allowed to swear at all at a referee. You basically get sent off for that. But Premier League players do it all the time. Mm. And Howard Webb said, well, actually, the difference is that the camera angle makes it look like they're much closer than they are. It's very difficult for us to hear all the time because the stadium can be very loud. It's just not as cut and dried as that. Mm-hmm. I think Michael Oliver was either so fuming that he had to watch really closely a terrible game, or that Dalot was a complete prick. You know, and Dalot should know better than that. I mean, I just don't think you can have any sympathy for the player there.
Ultimately,
I don't know how you can.
The result means that Arsenal finished the weekend top of the Premier League because they beat Brighton 2-0 earlier in the day. Jim Campbell, Arsenal are on the verge of yet another Premier League title.
You said that about Leicester.
And they won.
They won it.
No, way after they won it.
Oh, I was just getting
under Brendy.
No,
it was very good to get a win against Brighton because they've been a bit of a bogey team recently. And it's not as simple as saying that Declan Rice is entirely responsible for a 5-goal swing between this season and last, but he was absolutely magnificent again. Just a brick wall moving around the pitch, just spraying balls around, absolutely dominating. And he was brilliant. Kai Havertz is a different player since that Newcastle game, it would seem.
Another goal.
That naughty tackle, something's woken up in him. Like he seems a lot more present, a lot more direct. His thinking seems quicker. Another goal for him, as you say, so that's really good. Arteta's got detention again, I think, or he certainly will do soon. Got another book in. And I think the Villa game was an interesting one because despite losing the game, Arsenal did play well. So that was sort of encouraging. It's not one of those ones where you go away with it thinking, oh, God,
it's a
sign
of a
malaise. Yeah. And I think as well, they probably should have won this game by more goals.
You brushed over the Arteta yellow card, by the way. Well, I think we should go back to that because when after the game, if it was a fair yellow, he said, no, I was waving to Martinelli and then just ran out of the interview.
Maybe Martinelli was waving back. Oh, there he is.
If you see me waving, lads, just any of you, just wave back.
Yeah.
Okay, because otherwise this is going to.
Well, Dalot was punching a ghost.
Yeah, he was.
He showed that ghost.
He was saving the referee.
Yeah,
if anything, gentlemen, Newcastle United 3, Fulham 0. The Dan Byrne derby, of course.
The DBD.
Raul Jimenez was sent off after 22 minutes for jumping dangerously, as some described it, into Sean Longstaff.
What was it? Forget all the decision. We can come on to that. What was he actually doing? I don't know what he was doing.
I'm going to have a go at this.
You've asked the right man.
It was like when a cat turns around and sees a cucumber and flies in the air.
Yeah, it was a bit like that. Yeah. I think what he was trying to do is I think he probably thought Longstaff was going to play like the ball, like loop it up in the air or play a pass, I don't know, cross field or whatever. And he thought, I'll jump and try and block that. And it became very apparent very early that was going to happen. So he pulled out the tackle and then sort of Schumachered him in the face, didn't he?
Yeah, Marcus Silva took it well, didn't he?
Well, he often does. He's you know, he's a passionate man. Yeah, the referee was unable to handle the pressure and said a lot more. Actually, you can watch the whole thing. I mean, to the point of BBC Sport on Instagram, like, played a little tune under him. A state broadcaster mugging off a Premier League manager, a fine Premier League manager, I might add.
They're not a state broadcaster; they're a public service broadcaster.
Sorry, what I meant. That's what I meant. Yes,
Very important in these times, these troubled times.
They're
to get
a piff
this right.
broadcaster.
You went straight to it, didn't you, in your head?
I did.
I love it. What I would love if, what I think that these interviewers should do, I don't know who interviewed Marcus Silva after the game, but I love, because you could probably be able to see how fuming, because he wears his heart on his sleeve.
Yeah.
And you could see he's got a face like thunder from the start. I'd love it if the interviewer just went up to Marcus Silva straight away and just went, any words of congratulations for Lewis Miley being the being the youngest ever Premier League scorer?
Yeah.
Because he would have been like, what?
Newcastle's youngest
scorer. Yeah.
And he would have corrected you like I did.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
He's very studious. Yeah.
He's a lot more impressive than you, if you don't mind me saying.
What, Marcus Silva?
Yeah.
Lewis Miley as well. You could throw in as well. I just wanted to clarify.
Lewis Miley was born in 2006.
Yeah, some people were.
It's great, isn't it?
Some people were born after.
It's great.
Like your child and mine.
We're dangerously close to having a player who was born after the ramble started.
No way.
We are.
Yeah. I just thought everyone just stopped breathing.
They should have.
Should have.
Looking at you.
Right. Look, if you want to talk about that sort of stuff, tell it to your mate Matt Letizia. He'd be very, very interested.
But, you won't believe what the government are doing with people.
Well, look, Raul Jimenez was unfairly sent off. Newcastle probably. I mean, he was clearly annoyed that he got an elbow from Jamal Lascelles. The funny thing is with that is that when it's slowed down and when you look at it again, it looks quite bad.
Yeah.
But I sort of, like, your arms do move. Do you know what I mean? Like, he has caught him in the face. There's no stories about that. But I think the reason why it probably wasn't a sending off is because as your body moves, like, sometimes you just get an unlucky one. I don't think he's really gone, right, I'm going to raise it. Because it wasn't a raised elbow. I think him and his, you know.
Silva said of that, before the red card, it was a clear elbow from Lascelles. He knew Raul was there, the elbow out, until the 21st minute. In all the moments, the referee didn't give us one foul for Newcastle. It was a free kick every time. And actually, there is something about St James's Park that, like, it certainly, whether it's actually true or not, it feels like that as the visiting team, doesn't it? Because the crowd is so up and they are quite a robust team. Yeah. And it's Anfield does this as well, you know. If every chested ball the crowd appeal as a handball, and every tackle the crowd appeal as a foul, and that's not to say that they're not watching the game properly, but they're just so invested in it and so partisan and so ready to see those margins as for or against their team in the appropriate context of those, that those stadiums are cauldron like and
Old Trafford to that.
I don't know that you can.
You statistically could.
Not
apparently, back in the day, didn't they do it? And there was a
true. Yeah,
done.
I suppose there was
not
the
now,
idea
though,
of the Homer referee.
But my take on it was a little bit different, which is just that I think that Silva was using a bit of sophistry. Really, he was so annoyed that it was unrealistic that they were going to get anything out of the game for that to happen so early at St James's Park, given the run they've been on. I know they lost to Liverpool, but they still, you know, it was life and death. Really, they could have got something out of that. They had a great result before that and then two amazing results after that. And I think it looked to me like he felt they were starting to build some momentum.
Yeah.
And that's just been killed dead.
Well, it's definitely that. And obviously the man back among the goals has been sent off, and that kills any chance of getting anything out of that game. And you saw it at Old Trafford last season in the FA Cup. Fulham 1-0 up. They're on the verge of going to a semi-final. And, you know, goodness knows what might have happened after that.
Being there hammered you are, in the you final. Again.
Being hammered in the final by Man City. And so I think, yes, you're right. His passions run high and so on. And I, it's just the frustration. Mm. Like I often liken it to on this podcast, it's the bloke in Lockstock who's been chucked out of the game of cards, and you know, the bouncer shuts the door and he's,
you get my money?
Wankers! That's what he just shouts.
The bouncer is Sol Campbell.
In Snatch, I believe.
Oh, that's Snatch.
I think I got that wrong. Somebody pulled me up on that.
Okay, right, fine. It's tackling the big issues.
Yeah, as always.
Yeah.
Sol Campbell's acting career.
Yeah.
But Newcastle, obviously, good value for the win. They're back on the horse.
Look, weirdly, Sol Campbell's acting career is better than
you
his political
go back
career.
To that.
It kind of goes football,
yes,
playing, then management, then acting, then politics.
Mm. I'm sure there's something in between acting and politics as well.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, business
maybe
stuff. Yeah. But I mean, Lewis Miley scored in that goal. It just gets better and better for the 17-year-old. It's ridiculous. Sean Longstaff revealed that the Newcastle safeguarding officer visited training on Friday to check the rest of the squad were being nice to him, because he's under 18, of course.
It's refreshing to see an organisation care so much about human rights. Isn't
it is, actually, yeah. It is. Did you see the Fulham fans on the train to Newcastle picture enjoying a festive spread of cheese, crackers and Gravelax?
Gravelax is the bottom of it.
And a lot more. It's so good.
It's all from Aldi, and you can sort of make the defence, oh, is that, you know, is this sort of bit of reverse snobbery, but it's Gravelax.
I don't even know what Gravelax is.
It's kind of a salmon-y thing.
Yeah, salmon.
Oh, that stuff. Yeah. The reason why I know about that is because about a dozen people message me going, "Oh, Spiller's on his way up to Newcastle," sort of saying like that. You know?
I like the football snobbery towards that, like, being like, "Oh, it's fucking ridiculous, isn't it?" Yeah. Why don't you eat? Why do you eat shit?
Yeah.
Why don't you get on the train and eat shit?
There's definitely something in that. Yeah. Like Jim says, "Oh, justify this, justify that." Here's how you justify it. Why don't you just eat the food you like, going somewhere you want to go?
I'll tell you what.
It's a real like working class kind of thing about that. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you don't deserve that. Yeah. None of us do.
Yeah. There's something nice about going on a train with Luke, talking of working class treats. Always brings, is it a Welsh tea cake or a Welsh?
I like a Welsh cake.
Just a Welsh cake.
Bring the Welsh cakes along. Yeah, I'll spread them around.
Do you eat them outside of the train or is it just for the train?
I think the thing is,
it's a Luke Moore train treat,
So the best Welsh cakes are available from Marks and Spencer's.
Yeah.
And there's always an M&S food.
Oh, M&S is it?
Most of the train stations.
Oh, you've changed.
Well, I like to share the wealth among my friends. Yeah, I'll give you a Welsh cake, Jim. You come see me.
You've probably stopped pissing in your own hands, haven't you?
I have, yeah. That's the old story about Man City fans at Fulham. The old, you must know that story, where there's a load of people queuing up for the pub outside Craven Cottage. It might be the Crabtree. I can't remember which one it is.
That's a bit further down. But
it is. Yeah, whatever pub it is, doesn't matter. And everyone's queuing for the bathroom.
There's no pub outside the ground.
Because it's busy. And this Man City fan goes in and starts taking the slash in the sink, right? Mm. And this Fulham fan says, "Do you mind not doing that? Because I'm here with my son, you know. You shouldn't really be pissing the sink." And the Man City fan goes, "Oh yeah, you know you're in fucking London now, don't you?" making it. And the thing about that is, you're making out that everyone in Manchester pisses in sink, which I don't think is true.
Yeah,
it's just ridiculous all round.
The snobby Londoners.
Yeah, I know.
Pissing where they're told
to. It's like the Warnock, isn't it?
We're London, aren't we?
Or the Huddersfield Town fan getting a goal flagged off for offside. Typical London lefty.
Yeah, I think it's a lot worse than all that. I do remember though. I think it was Stoke when they came to Fulham once and walking around Putney High Street. It's obviously quite a busy area. And I just walked past one of them and he looked up and he just went, "Gourmet Burger King." Couldn't figure it out.
Burger Kitchen.
Yeah.
Gourmet Burger Kitchen.
That's what he said.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
I mean, Jim, you've had one bloke getting off a train. Shithole.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a Liverpool fan going up to Wembley. He hasn't even got off the train. He was looking out the window. And it was so...
He's
like,
right. Yeah. It was,
but it felt like he didn't really mean it. He knew he had to say something. Yeah. And it had to be like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. I don't know. Jimmy, you've got something you want to say.
I do. Well, William Ray has something he wants to say. Oh. So he's written it down in an email and he's sent it to us. He says, "Hi, Ramblers. I thought you might be interested to know that Michael Owen played Celebrity Deal or No Deal last night." We always enjoy a weird little Mickey Owen update.
It's not Noel Edmonds, but it was Stephen Mulhern, sadly. I mean, Michael Owen against Noel Edmonds would have been a meeting of minds.
Absolutely. Edmonds and Letitia, that's a dream. But William carries on. "I bet you're wondering whether he was brave enough to go the distance. Well, with two rounds to go, he still had £25,000 on the table and was offered £10,200 by the banker. He said no deal. His daughter, Gemma, then told him not to pick her as she thought she had the £25,000 in her box. Michael picked her anyway, and she did indeed have the £25,000 in her box. Michael was then left with £5,000 and £4,000 on the table. He was offered £4,600. He said no deal again. And guess what? He took home £4,000 for his chosen charity. Oh. At least he's proved he is brave.
You go on a TV show for charity. You let the production company stump up the £4,000 for the charity you've chosen. You're worth £60 million yourself and you're labelled a prat, aren't you?
Apparently in the green room, he was eating Gravelax.
Right, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm fuming.
And he threw a load of it on the floor.
I'm just saying, £4,000's pitiful. Yeah. I mean, yeah, if it's £4,000, you could at least say, "I'll chuck in £4,000 myself."
We might well have done.
I'm saying we don't know if we did or not.
You don't know. That would be tremendous, by the way, but we don't know.
Also, one of the things about celebrities going on those kind of charity shows is to also raise the awareness for that cause to... Mm-hmm. other people. So A, he might have contributed. Do you know what charities, he's also doing that.
Do you know what charities need more than awareness, Vish?
Money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's basically money they need.
Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Do follow us on X, TikTok, Instagram and YouTube at Football Ramble. And don't forget to subscribe on your podcast app. Thank you, Luke Moore.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for tuning to Hanth Raja.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim Campbell.
Thank you too.
And thank you, Michael Owen.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.